afternoon and welcome to the latest Parapanna podcast. So this month's podcast is about the importance of having an effective ESG process in the paraplanning world. And I'm really pleased to be joined today by Lee Cole from ESG Accord, Rob Kingsbury from Professional Paraplanner, Rhys Edwards from Hampshire Hill, Sean Davies Cole from Planworks, and Alex Burrows even from eParaplan. So welcome everybody. I hope you're all well. How are you all?
Good, thanks.
Good. Warm. Apart from that, all right, yeah.
Well, the good news is I'm actually on holiday this week over in Norfolk, and it is very warm over here as well. So I'm not escaping the warmth in one way, shape, or form. So let's start our podcast off with a question for Lee, and I suppose that's what should paraplanners be aware of in respect of ESG already, and what impact the consumer duty will have. So Lee, do you want to give us a bit of an intro and a bit of an overview and insight to that?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Rich. Well, from a consumer duty perspective, I think the short answer is you'll find nothing in consumer duty about ESG and sustainability. So next podcast. No. So what you'll actually have is a situation where financial advisors need to demonstrate that clients have made an informed choice, and all this feeds into the paraplanning side of things. So what constitutes an informed choice? Well, that means clients need educational material. So advisors need to make sure that customers are aware of the things. Sounds a bit perverse, this, but they're aware of all the things they don't want in order to make a positive confirmation about the thing they do. That's a positive choice. And that feeds into investment preferences and objectives. And so how do firms identify investment preferences and objectives? We tend to use a broad spectrum of capital, which includes ESG and sustainability. So this isn't about, you know, what processes do you need under consumer duty to do ESG? They're the same processes as you need to be able to advise clients, which is allow clients to make an informed choice and gather information on their investment preferences and objectives. And it's that last bit that really is important for paraplanners, because that feeds into the due diligence work and the suitability letter preparation. Paraplanning firms are going to need a mechanism, if they don't already have one, to actually look at the different preferences a client might have. And they may be from strict ethical through to, yeah, I don't mind a bit of ESG. Well, obviously, if you're a paraplanner, you're trying to write a report based around, I don't mind a bit of ESG, you'd hope there would be a little bit more clarification on file as to what constitutes a bit. Because whatever an advisor chooses and a paraplanner chooses to be a bit, bet your life if something goes wrong, that won't be with client's definition of a bit. So it's sort of asking the right questions at the right time in the right way at the advice process, and then transferring that information into the paraplanning side.
Okay. Does there need to be an element of consistency and recordability that will need to be sort of demonstrated under consumer duty?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole thing about consumer duty, it's effectively wrapping up all the existing rules. So the why you should do something are already in COBS and PROD. What consumer duty says is if your aim is to deliver good outcomes, demonstrate how you've achieved that, understanding that under COBS and PROD, you need to identify clients making an informed choice and therefore understanding what their preferences and objectives are. And so the whole thing is interlinked. And obviously from a client's perspective, and to some extent advisors in ESG space as well, I don't know what I don't know. So what am I supposed to ask? I say that simply because we hear a lot of advisors say, my clients are not interested in ESG. How do you know? Because I know my clients. And it's sort of a rather circular argument, and that isn't going to work under consumer duty.
Okay. All right. So that's what I suppose sets the scene a little bit. So Rhys, Sean, Alex, what are you doing at the moment regarding ESG? What sort of processes have you got in place? And are you sort of aware of what may come up your way? So who wants to start me off on that one?
I can. I mean, I'm going to expect there not to be much to say about this, so I'm going to hand over to somebody else if anybody else has got anything to chip in on.
Okay, Alex, you're about to throw in there, I think.
Yeah, we've created a questionnaire around ESG that we can use with the advisors that we work with can use with clients. Really as a starting point, just to sort of open up the conversation and go from there. Because that, you know, I think there's about 10 or so questions on there, but those 10 questions aren't going to tell you definitively what they want, but it opens up the conversation with them and it gives you an idea about where you're going to go. And it also allows us to demonstrate that we've had a conversation about it. This is what they've decided. And then it's something that we can send out for the client to DocuSign or something to send back to say, this is their choices. But then it's important after that to get the advisor to make good notes on their conversation about what they're looking for. And it's also about making sure that the advisor has enough knowledge to be able to be confident about it. Like you said at the start, if 65% of them aren't confident with it, they need to become more confident so they can have that conversation. Otherwise, how are you going to be able to say that you're demonstrating that you're giving a full service of all available funds?
Absolutely right. Reese, what are you doing up at Hampshire Hill?
Yeah, so the 65% figure, that's an interesting one, because I don't, what we found here is it wasn't necessarily the confidence in knowledge of ESG and ESG products. It was more about where do you place it in the process. We've got an ESG investment policy that we adhere to, and I suppose mostly what we're doing at the moment, we are still training the advisors and the staff as to what ESG is, because we're still not sure. I mean, you know, I know that there's a lot of firms out there that would say they've got some expertise in, but the goalposts have been changing with it fairly constantly. You know, ESG at one point, it was all negatively screened, and it's not now. And as Lee said before, it's kind of, you know, you can go down that route of telling them the things they could be invested in, you know, and educating the client in that way. But as long as we've had a documented discussion with the client around ESG, what their preferences might be, because what we don't want to do is end up negatively screening when somebody might want to go more down an impact route. So we like to make sure that we've covered kind of both ways and let the client lead the discussion in a lot of ways. We're not, because we've had very similar things to what Lee was alluding to at the start, where it's, oh, the clients aren't interested, which is always a bizarre thing. The clients. Okay, so that's all of them then.
Yeah, 100%.
And we do find that, I'm going to word this, you could argue that there are some regional biases towards attitudes towards ESG. You know, ex-mining communities aren't normally bothered about oil and coal. But it's, at the moment, all we're trying to do is make sure we've had a documented discussion with the client, and then we'll just keep educating the advisors first and foremost. Let's find out what ESG is. They've all got the E. They know what E is. So let's work on the S and G now. And then I think we will just have to go further and further into it as we can. But we are trying to be consistent with it. We've got providers now that we will speak to on a regular basis that are experts within the ESG field. For us, that's a lot easier to deal with them at the moment. And then we can open up, you know, further and further, more and more solutions as we go.
Okay. Rob, professional paraplanner, obviously this is a moving goalpost, I suppose, from where we started a couple of years ago with ESG. But with professional paraplanner, I suppose, how's that accelerating now? What sort of input and resource are you getting from providers, and what sort of requests are you getting from paraplanners?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of requests actually. We've got an ESG zone on the website just to cover that, to cover stories on ESG and sustainability. And I think what we're all waiting for basically is some clarification, as Reese was saying. Yeah, we've got the disclosure requirements coming out. Supposedly by the end of June, but as you say, probably Q3. And I think they're really going to be things that sort of set things more in concrete. Because you've got the three ways of looking at funds. You've got sustainable focus, sustainable improvers, sustainable impact. All of which, you know, you can slot your funds under. But there are going to be some funds that sit outside of that. So you're going to have funds that you know call themselves ESG and aren't, you know, that's just a label. Yeah. That's the greenwashing side of things. And you've got ethical funds who also sit outside of that because they don't fit within those criteria. And Lee can probably talk more about that. But so I think, you know, I think once we get those requirements in place, then I think everybody's got more of a chance of actually trying to deal with this. But I think the key point that's come out so far is knowing how the client feels about ethical, sustainable ESG investing. You know, how if they've got a pot of money, where do they want it? Do they want it in, you know, a fund that invests in Shell because they want this that comes under the sustainable improvers label?
You have to mention Shell.
Because Shell is improving. It's, you know, it's an oil company, but it's improving, you know. Or do they just want to say, no, I don't want to invest in Shell because it's an oil company. I think it's doing bad things in the world. I think that's, once those come out, that's going to be important. But I think it's more important that the financial advisors and parapowers obviously find out where their client, individual clients' thoughts lie.
Okay. Lee, I mean, we could go into the, I mean, the FCA in their consultation document, they did a lot of research with customers and there was a very high proportion that said they would be interested in impact investing and investing in areas that made a difference. And there seems to be a disconnect between what advisors were talking to clients about and what clients needed, and some concern from the FCA in terms of that disconnect. So Lee, in terms of what we've heard there, I think that's fairly consistent from what we have in the market. So, mm-hmm. what comments could you say to what we've discussed already? Sean, is there anything that you want to add? Sorry, I don't want to miss you.
I mean, I think some really great points have been brought up so far. You know, I love Rhys saying about consistency and education. You know, they're really key parts. I'm seeing, because I work with a lot of different firms, I get a bit more of a bird's eye view of it all. So, consistency is a really key part where, you know, it comes down to, you know, advice processes. And, you know, we all think we've got like things like attitude to risk nailed, although most of us still think that that's a bit of a woolly area as well. But if you think that that's kind of woolly, like getting into the whole realm of how do you understand a client's preferences is even more of a tricky area, I think, which goes into the education part of how to have those conversations, what tools to use, if any, as well as educating yourself as a power planner and financial planner as well, to lead you down to kind of the what do I think, once you can get to that point in any kind of thing within financial planning, but especially obviously in ESG we're talking about today, once you have a view about what you think about things, you can then make a call about what to do and understand how that might suit different clients. You know, you started talking about Rob, the kind of stewardship kind of thing, that leading into like, you know, oil companies, the companies that are going to be negatively screened out. But then you kind of look at stewardship and you go, okay, is that a really, do I really believe that that could be a good ESG approach for me and my business as a financial planner? Or do I want to take a more firm view with my clients as a whole? Or do I, you know, if not, then how do I have those individual conversations with them? So I see that as being the absolutely most tricky bit. And from where I've seen it with some firms, financial planning firms, where they take a view that they're only going to make recommendations for ethical ESG type portfolios or solutions, they've got it kind of a little bit easier because they don't have to, they kind of understand from the client, oh, you're my type of client that believes what I believe about doing good things in the world and not investing in the things I don't believe in. And if they say no, then they don't work with them. It's a bit easier because you don't have to kind of go down that, right, okay, so which bit is going to work for you and which bit can I plug in and which bit isn't going to work so much for you, because it's a really difficult area.
Okay. Lee, I'm coming back to you on this one because that's quite a good introduction, I suppose, into the Accord initiative, because a lot of the things that we're saying in terms of that consistency advisor understanding, paraplanner process, customer education. What's the Accord Initiative about and how will that help?
Okay, the Accord Initiative, it sounds big. Well, it is big, but it's a website effectively. So we'll be launching that on the 4th of July. And it's specifically geared at helping advisors transition from a position of not sure what to do or don't want to do it to, okay, ESG and sustainability is built in. But the key point to make is that everything starts from consumer duty. It's not about pushing ESG. We've got a suite of tools. I think we're up to 19 documents at the moment to help advisors with the embedding ESG and sustainability. Normally at that point, if I'm speaking to advisors, you can see their jaws drop or whatever. And as a collective, oh my goodness, you know, I've got 19 documents to add into my process to do ESG. Actually, there's two on the advisory side. One, client education document. Can you please read this before we meet so that we can have a meaningful conversation? And two, during the meaningful conversation, recording what the client's decision is. So two client-facing documents. And then around that suite of documentation, sorry, the rest of it is all compliance, amendments to terms of business, website statement, suitability, letter, paragraphs. But around that, we've got advisor education and training things around the detail of ESG. So where a client has said, yes, they want it, what do you do then? And it's based on my business partner, Ellie's experience of running her own compliance business and mine. I think I fall into the group of IFAs that Sian described, which was I ran an IFA business for 31 years and all we did was ethical. And it was really easy. Well, I'm not saying the advice was easy, you know, it was an easier part of the process because if a client didn't want to invest all their money, they never came near us. All their money ethically, they never came near us. So it was brilliant. If we knew exactly what all our target markets were, you know, Prod came along, it was right. Well, all those clients go into ethical funds because they're all ethical, because by default, we wouldn't take them on if they weren't. So that was easy. Actually, target market. Sorry, there's a thing there. Identifying, you can actually almost get to a binary position, which is the clients that don't want ESG, as long as they've been identified, they are a target market group that can be matched with all the funds that don't do ESG. That's good. Yep. But from the Accord Initiative perspective, we'll have a Find a Sustainable Advisor on there. So advisors that are either have their own or use our suite of tools, we'll list them so the public can see that. We'll also have, drum roll here, find a sustainable compliance firm, find a sustainable platform, find a sustainable back office, find a sustainable network, and find a sustainable power planner. So we'll be listed. So advisors are saying, okay, I've downloaded all these tools. I've had an epiphany. I'm going to talk about ESG and sustainability. Now, who am I going to get to do the due diligence and write appropriate suitability letters? And so we would list power planners on there.
And you've got all of the relevant documentation, as you say, in there in terms of suitability report responses, depending on what your outcome was from your initial questionnaire. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Did I pick up that correctly?
Yeah.
And am I right in my understanding, and this is just my involvement with you previously, that it's a triage process, isn't it, in terms of with the client. So you have that initial conversation. If they're not interested in ESG, then you don't do anything else about ESG. Is that right?
Yeah. So yeah, triage is a good word. I mean, that we originally had a document called triage, and that comes from Ellie's years of doing file reviews for DB transfers. And so you used to looking for where's the triage in the process. You can't go from nothing to 100% on DB transfers in terms of, oh, why are you here? I don't know. Well, you're here to transfer your money, aren't you? Which possibly, if you look at the prosecutions and things, that's probably where a lot of the conversations went. But within ESG and sustainability, it's just about finding out. But the assumption that if clients want it, they'll ask, we've got to knock that on the head.
Yeah.
Because they don't know about it, in the same way as in 30 years, I never had a client metaphorically kick my door down and insist that they told me about their attitude to risk and capacity for loss, and that their life couldn't go on until they told me about it. So using the same logical extension, if none of the clients ever insisted that they tell me their attitude to risk, clearly they're not interested. So why bother asking? I'll just put them in a fund So, you know, the language that you can just take out attitude to risk and bung in ESG or sustainability, and either, you know, one of them's got to be right or wrong. And the right approach is you've got to ask clients about things they don't understand, i.e. attitude to risk, capacity loss, and have a dialogue. And you've got to have a dialogue about ESG in order to find out that the clients don't want it. The whole point of consumer duty is for a client to end up in a fund that doesn't have ESG or sustainability is probably going to be, for a lot of people, the absolute perfect good outcome. But if you don't have a process that says, I knew what it was I didn't want, I don't want this fluffy ESG, sustainable impact, UNSDGs, be nice today, woke fund. I don't want any of that. I want the same thing as you've delivered for me in the last 25 years, the way it's always been done. That's fine. That's an informed choice because the client knew what it was they didn't want, all the fluffy stuff. But in raising the question, you then have to you know, have that conversation with a client.
Okay. And is that informed? Is that informed decisions and whatever? So okay, so over to the paraplanners amongst us, and to Rob as well, from a professional paraplanner. So what is that? What's your initial response to that? Because it may be the first time that you've heard about the Accord Initiative.
Can I ask Lee a question? Actually,
you can. Of course you can.
So a lot of fact finds often sometimes it's just, you know, are you interested in ESG? Tick this box. Yep. No. Are you saying now that really we need a process like attitude to risk and a questionnaire that's separate from the fact find?
Yeah,
it should absolutely be a separate process.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, the only way you can deliver good outcomes, we've got a very simple Venn diagram. Basically, it's three circles. Circle one, fact find. Circle two, attitude to risk. Circle three, investment preferences and objectives. If you don't know how the client wants their money invested, and that might be the same way as I've always done it, that's fine, then you can't deliver good outcomes. Consumer duty can't be met. You can't demonstrate that you've met the cobs and prod aspects of consumer duty, which is, did the client make an informed choice? How can you show that? And then what did the informed choice lead to? In other words, what was the client's preferences and objectives? And Rob, you mentioned about, you know, putting the ESG question on the fact find. I can't tell you how many rules that breaks. If not in the least, the shoehorning. So you can have it normal or you can have ESG. But as an advisor, I'm not going to talk to you about sustainable and ethical and responsible and impact and SDGs. You're going to have this or this. That's a binary switch. But also it fails consumer duty on the basis of, what did the client or can a client make an informed decision? Do you want ESG? It's like saying to a client, Do you want to apply pound cost averaging and the time value of money to your investment planning? What does that mean? Don't worry about what it means. Do you want it or not? All the clients pretty well say yes. Good. Then I'll be one of those that have to say yes. Then you get the contrarian that goes, no, if everybody else is doing it, I'll have the opposite. So putting an ESG question is, as I say, it just fails so many existing regulations, let alone the little one that comes in on the 31st of July.
Sean, and Alex and Reese, anything you'd like to ask Lee or add to what we've had so far around processes, procedures and things that you find might be beneficial to paraplanners to help with their advisor input?
I mean, I'm just loving what Lee just said. He's just speaking exactly my thoughts about the things that we see in the profession that I don't like. And the main thing is about ESG. You know, we don't know, I'm going to say as a profession, we don't know how to deal with it. That came out in your data earlier. But that question, whenever I see it, I literally cringe because it's so black and white. It's, you know, it's given to the client in usually an online situation where they're filling out their fact find away from a client meeting, away from any discussion, away from any informed education. Oh, what does that question mean? There's no opportunity for that. And you would never think to do that about attitude to risk, because I think we've come quite a way in our profession with attitude to risk. You know, I've been around long enough to have been around when capacity for loss wasn't a thing and then it became a thing. So we've seen that quite advanced kind of over the last like 10, 15 years. And we haven't seen anything like that advance about ethical ESG sustainability yet, but we need to. And I think, like I said earlier, with the kind of the firms that I'm seeing that do want an ethical approach, and that's the only thing that they're going to do. They're younger firms, so things are changing, I think. But yeah, it that absolutely gets my goat as well. Like Lee mentioned about seeing that one question. Especially when I've then seen other questionnaires, ESG, sustainable questionnaires, that are good. They're not leading. They ask kind of the best ones I've seen ask a question, and then that leads on to another question. It's not like here's 10 questions, answer them all, because they're the worst.
Yeah. If I can just come in on that, Rich, from within our framework, we actually offer two options to, well, say we offer, we provide advisors with the tools to offer clients two options around that, which way do I want to go? And because we've got consumer duty and because we've got SDR coming, which includes anti-greenwashing, there's a perfect positive storm rather than a perfect negative storm hitting advisors, which is all the tools they need, the protection they have in making recommendations from providers they can trust. They're all coming with consumer duty and SDR. But an aspect of the process we make available for advisors is you can go through the process with a client, and there's an option for the client to say, or the question rather, binary, this is a binary thing. Do you want to leave how the manager does ESG or sustainable or ethical to the manager? Or do you want to fill in a questionnaire? So we think most advisors and most clients, certainly first timers, can go through the whole process without ever completing a questionnaire, because they've had the information beforehand to actually have a meaningful conversation. I use the term spectrum of capital. I know what normal looks like, or the way it's always been done. I know what normal plus ESG is. Oh, the labels, yeah, that as Rob described them, you know, the three labels that are coming, and ethical down the other end. I've looked at all of them. I'd like a sustainable improvers. Okay, do you want to tell the managers how to do their job, or do you want to leave how they do ESG or how they do their sustainable improving to them? And all the tools such as disclosure statements, company funds will have to annually say, this is what we do, this is how we do it, these are the companies we're talking to, these are the controversial holdings we've got and why we're holding them. So all that information is available for clients. Oh, so once a year we can just have a chat about how they're improving. Cool, we'll just let them get on with it then. No questionnaires, no detailed ESG sustainable questionnaires for a client that says, yeah, I quite like a bit of improvers. I drive a car, I know it's got oil in it, but I just want everybody to be nicer eventually.
Okay, yeah. So that sounds, but it sounds logical when you say it like that, Lee. I mean, it does sound logical. And Alex, Rhys, come on, let's have your views.
I've got one question, and I've got just one thing that I think could just try and get a what everybody thinks. I mean, the first thing, we've talked about ESG, we've talked about risk. What comes first? Because that's something that we've been debating here, because discussing one before the other, is that a logical way of doing it? I mean, they very much could sit side by side, but it's what leads the dance. You know, do you agree a risk profile with a client and then discuss what they want to do from an ESG perspective and pick your solution that way? Or do you agree what their thoughts are on ESG first and then discuss risk after that and pick the solution that way? You could end up at the same place, but you could not, dependent on, you know, whether there's, I don't think it's necessarily solutions missing, but it's possibly that the information to get to the solution could be missing at the moment, obviously as things get clearer as we move forward, which I'm sure that they will do. It might make things easier. And then the second thing that we discussed here, so ESG, I'm generalizing here, but ESG portfolios and funds in sort of back end of 2021-ish and 2022 had an awful time performance-wise. And here, there were very few people who said that they wanted to go down an ESG route and impact investors that were particularly happy on the first review. And suddenly they became potentially less ethical. So how do we deal with that from a consumer duty perspective? Because if we're going to allow people to change their morals and ethics every year and then pick a solution based on that, that's a nightmare. I cleaned that up in my head then and I said something else. But, you know, that's a nightmare. So it's And again, it's kind of what I was saying at the start. We're still learning at Hampshire Hill, I would say, about where to put this in the process. We like the discussion. We're not massive on questionnaires. We like to have an open discussion. Because as Sean was saying, that if you can keep the questions more open rather than yes, no. Because we got sent a ridiculous questionnaire from a compliance help house years ago that was just a list of ethical issues. Yes, no. Ridiculous. But it's where do we have that conversation and what leads your conversation? When you're talking about what informed position do you want to put the client in? Do you talk to them about risk first or do you talk to them about ESG first? I'm just interested to see what everyone thinks.
So I'll just quickly say something on that one. In my view, the process should be what, how, which is, what have you got? Okay, that's the fact find, crude, but you know, what have you got? What is your tolerance for risk? Because if it's one, there is no other step to make. So you've got to do the what have you got? What is your risk tolerance? And then how would you like what you have and what your risk tolerance is applied to the investments? And that's where all the elasticity comes in, because the client might say, you might get to process, yeah, you're a risk too, that's great, so we know what you've got and you've got a lot of money, so we'll be looking at lots of different options. You're risk too and you want to do all impact, so that means find me an impact fund that is okay on a scale of 1 to 10, less than 6. So therefore there's the conversation. We can do impact, but you need to move your risk from 2 to 6, not recommended, because there are good reasons why you're a risk too, or we need to look at a different way of doing impact. And that might be to say, why don't you invest 99% in the Sustainable Improvers Fund, because it looks like a normal fund, but they're actually trying to get the companies to be better, and give 1% to an impact charity. Because you can achieve more impact via that donation than you could necessarily on a risk two basis ever find anything to achieve risk. So whoa, sudden now you're into, well, take a little bit and achieve impact and then just carry on as normal. And if that's right, feel good about it. Why not?
Okay. Alex.
I wasn't aware of the Accord Initiative, so that's a nice thing for me to go and look at afterwards. So I shall definitely be looking more at that. In terms of what Rhys was saying, I think, well, Lee was saying it has to be attitude to risk first, but because it's all about preference after that, as Lee was saying. But in terms of doing it with advisors, because we work with so many, we've got some that are quite switched onto it and have good conversations and you get good detailed notes back. And then we have the other end as well, where it's like I said before, you're interested in the ESG, no, okay, let's gloss over that then and just carry on. So it's something that I think is going to change a lot once we get the results of the reviews and everything else back. But I think until then, it's going to be very difficult to know how we're going to move that process forward.
Yeah, I think there's a, as Lee was a sort of aligning to, the risk is if we don't do, we're not following the process that we need to in terms of understanding clients' preferences, and also in terms of allowing them to make an informed choice, which comes under a consumer duty from the 31st of July. So there's a bit of, like I said, there is that little bit of disconnect, but we still need to do that in the interim. So
yeah.
And that's what I like about the Accord Initiative. It enables us to sort of fill those gaps in the interim, but also because of the way that it's structured, it will future-proof it in terms of what subsequently comes out, because it's taking into account all of what's likely to potentially proposed under the SDR regime and greenwashing. And we'll just come on to that very quickly in a second. But then if there are any changes, like all of the labels, all of the questionnaires are very easy to update to the then labels that are likely to come our way come after the third quarter, and that consistency for advisors stroke para planners and having that joined up part is where it becomes key, because once the labels are in, there's probably no getting away from it in terms of having to have those greater conversations and gaining that greater understanding in my understanding of where we're going to go. So, let's just come on then finally, if we may, Lee, to the SDR labels and anti-greenwashing. I know it's been put back by the FCA because of the number of responses that they had from different right. Providers and firms and paraplanners. They had a massive response to their consultation document, and as a result, they wanted to make sure they get it right and get it really well aligned. Where are we on that journey, Lee? And what's likely to happen? And how does the Accord Initiative link into those potential changes?
Our friends in the FCA have said they're still on track to deliver SDR in Q3. And I should say that ESG Accord sits on the Disclosures and Labels Advisory Group. So we've been, a group of people assisting the FCA draft consultation paper and now have input into the policy statement. But what's actually in the policy statement, only the FCA know at the moment. So we're looking at three labels which will have sustainability at their core, and then at the moment no proposal to have any other label. So a fund will either be, if you think about it on a linear basis, left of the labels, so there'll be, that's the way it's always done, conventional investment, and then to the right of the labels you'll have ethical, they're not labeled products, and you've got sustainable in the middle. What you will have is that pretty well every connotational permutation of ESG, sustainable, green, planet friendly, planet hugging, whatever, responsible, impact, SDG terminology, all those will be protected terms and only allowed to be used by a labeled fund. So this idea of I don't know what's what and I don't know which one, and this one claims it's sustainable and that one claims it's ESG, what's the difference? They're all the same under a label. I mean, I think the labels will be the death of ESG. As a conversation. So anybody that's got ESG says he with ESG Accord, in the company name, it's not great, but there are reasons and we'll park that. The death of ESG can't come quick enough. And I mean that in terms of talking about it and marketing it as a thing. It's not a thing, it's a risk management tool. And the idea of an advisor that could recommend a fund that took no account of environmental, social and governance, I mean, that would be great. Is there one advisor in the country willing to put the hand up and go, I use funds that do no governance? It's a very, very brave person. In other words, so every single client will have ESG regardless. So it's a meaningless conversation. What it's about is about values and sustainability and ethics, or not having it. That's the point. I just want to drop something in before I forget. I haven't mentioned the most important thing about the initiative, because it might sound from some of the things you've said that LIBF think the Accord Initiative is wonderful because there are some brown envelopes lying around. All the tools that we provide to advisors, the entire suite of all the documentation will be free to access. So, I'm happy, I'm comfortable giving it a plug, because as soon as we launch on the 4th of July, every advisor can access it. And we would say, even if there is an advisor out there, with 100% of their clients not wanting anything to do with ESG and sustainability, under consumer duty, dive onto our website, download the framework and complete that for every one of their clients to prove that they don't want it and they're consumer duty friendly. With SDR, it's about prepping. If you're not having the conversations now with a client, it's going to make it very difficult when the labels come in. The first review the day after the labels come in will be, oh, I now have to talk about these labels. Well, how long have they been out? Well, they came out last night. So what happened before? Oh, you could have done loads of things before. I just never told you. But now I'm going to tell you about it. So you could have done this, but you knew that you paid for donated to my daughter to climb Kilimanjaro 2 years ago for a climate change charity. And I've been investing in a way that conflicts with my daughter's thing that you gave me money for, and we could have had this conversation. So under consumer duty, you have a legal obligation to talk about ESG and sustainability within the context of how investments work, not separately, how they work. So normal or conventional ESG and sustainability, or drop the ESG bit, sustainability and ethical. So you've got a reason to talk about it now, which is a legal obligation, and then I don't want to be sitting there explaining to clients that I could have done this 2 years ago situation when the labels come in late 24.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to have about, we have got a, even when the FCA announced what their policy statement is, we'll have a year, yeah, we believe, before implementation, and what was originally in the consultation, wasn't it? So
yeah, but only a few weeks before Consumer Duty.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely right.
To get the process in place to be able to talk about sustainability. Okay. It's not until the labels come out.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of whilst we talked about it being free to advisors, also it's free to everybody. Power planners, advisors, fund managers, whoever it may be. So it's a free to market resource, he says.
It is.
And within that, there will be, am I right, believing there'll be some element of CPD in there for advisors if you wanted to help the advisors learn a little bit more about different elements?
Yeah, yeah, we're looking at developing an accreditation scheme. Not an exam based on what is ESG, because that's sort of intellectually interesting, boring as far as talking to clients. So about how do you apply the knowledge? How do you have a conversation? So there will be training and LIBF's accredited CPD in there, so that can sort of develop out, because this is something that isn't going to be, it's not a switch. Okay, wait for those to come in. Now we've got to do it, because they apply to investments. Then we'll get SDR for pensions. And then we'll get nature-based regulations coming in to bring nature, because sustainability is not about, well, it is about nature, but it's very discrete. Then we get nature-based. So for the next 10 years, you're going to see more and more of this coming on, and advisors that sort of cling on desperately to, I don't know how to deal with it. Well, they can go to a free resource from the 4th of July, and that'll help, but they do have to do something.
Okay. All right. So before I finish off, I'm just going to just sort of go around just ask everybody if they've got any final questions or anything they'd like to mention on this one. So Rob from Professional Power Planner.
I'm just wondering, Lee, how many people might be in the wrong kind of fund? Based on what you just said.
Yeah, the starting point will be everybody, unless you can prove they're in the right one. Because that's nothing about ESG, that's Consumer Duty. But it'll kick in. So from every review after the 31st of July, prove the clients are where they should be, which means you have to ask them how. Basically, it's difficult, but you have to ask them the things that could have been asked but weren't asked before. But leaving it is not a good option.
Okay. Reese.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a little bit like the Consumer Duty when we talked about that. If you're worried that you're not prepared, then you're probably not. I think that's probably the best way to go about it, because that attitude of every client's in the wrong one unless you can prove that they are in the right one. That should have always been in everybody's mind before somebody said the term ESG. So, but no. And thanks for clearing it up with the risk or ESG conversation first as well. That's been helpful for me anyway.
Yeah. What? How?
Just getting it clear that you can have that conversation. I'm just thinking for power planners that if you have a risk discussion, somebody comes out on a scale of 1 to 10, they come out as a 1, but they want to be an impact investor, and the impact solution that you have is a 6, you can put both of those to the client and have that conversation with them. You don't just have to pick one. You don't have to pick the risk profile one and ignore ESG. And on the flip side, you don't just have to put them in a 6 because that makes more sense from an ESG standpoint. Mm-hmm. So I think for power planners, that's quite a useful tool to have. It's another conversation that you can open up either with an advisor or, depending on your role, with the advisor or with the client themselves, which, is bulletproof if you're trying to prove that you've put the client in the right place, because you've had an additional conversation. So I think that's helpful.
Sean.
I'm just looking forward to these new resources that are going to come out. They sound great. I think anything that is helping us get more educated about these areas and any other areas, but ESG is one particular one that I find it quite difficult to understand all of the different terminology, and I'm a real geek, so if I find it difficult, well, financial planners, of course they find it difficult, unless that's their thing, unless that's their interest. So anything that helps us all understand all of this stuff better, then I'm all up for that. That's great. And I think it is fundamentally just ingraining this into the advice process in the firm, as well as our thinking, and just getting on board with it, because our profession is moving on, the way that we serve our clients is moving on, and we just need to get with it, because otherwise we're going to be left behind. It's those difficult conversations that you pointed out there, Lee, about, so what I could have had this 2 years ago. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in that situation as a client or as an advisor, but especially not as an advisor. You know, it's really difficult. So I think education is going to be the key to solving this. So the more resources, the better that are out there that talk to us in real terms, which would be really useful.
And understandable terms is the other thing that from some of the information I've seen.
Literally.
I think you're going to, like it, what I would say. Alex?
Yeah, I was going to echo what Sean was saying, really. I'm really looking forward to looking over everything that's coming out on the 4th of July. And then it's going to be about how we then take that back to the advisors that we're working with to help, like Sean said, educate them, to educate their clients. Difficult conversations. It's going to be fun.
Excellent. Well, that's it from the podcast. So a very big thank you to Lee, to Rob, to Reese, to Sean and Alex for joining us today. We do have another podcast that we'll be recording at the end of July, and that is about tax-advantaged investments, which is all about EIS VCT. So I'm really looking forward to that one. That came out of a conversation we had sort of about budget planning from a previous podcast. But I hope you do like what you've heard today. And as I say, if you Lee, just one final question. What's the web address for the Accord Initiative post 4th of July?
Accordinitiative.co.uk.
Well, there you go. Accordinitiative.co.uk. As simple as that. So have a look. And then obviously from our perspective, it's free. We've worked from an LIBF perspective. We've worked on the sounding board with them on a few things about getting it ready in terms of from a training and development point of view. So hence the reason why I wanted to get Lee across to the PowerPoint podcast today. But thank you all very much. I'm going to go and continue my holiday now. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend.